The first ever vaccinations for COVID-19 are on their way to Florida hospitals. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, that COVID vaccine could roll out in Florida before Christmas. We'll have the latest. What are your questions? 549-2937 to join the show. Then later, how you can protect yourself from fraud and scammers this holiday season when you're doing that holiday shopping. But first this hour, the latest numbers on the pandemic. Florida added nearly 8,000 COVID infections yesterday alone. And the statewide death toll of Florida residents rose by nearly 100. It stands now at a total of 19,378. And we've got about 75,000 active cases cumulatively in Northeast Florida, with over 1,000 deaths in our corner of the state. So the bottom line, everyone, once again, as we say every morning, is please keep wearing your mask and taking precautions. Meanwhile, Florida's top public health official said Tuesday that five Florida hospitals, including UF Health Jacksonville, could receive vaccinations for COVID-19 as early as next week. Department of Health Secretary Scott Rivkees, who also serves as the state's Surgeon General, gave that update during a statewide call with hospital administrators. Now, this news comes as the first people in the United Kingdom received vaccinations yesterday for coronavirus. And there have been some early reports of allergic reactions, too. So we're beginning the hour with the very latest on the plan to vaccinate Americans in this pandemic. We are so pleased to have a local expert, Dr. Michael Korn of the Jacksonville Center for Clinical Research. His company has participated in the Pfizer clinical trial for the COVID vaccine, and he's on the line now with the latest information. Dr. Korn, always good to hear your voice. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you very much for having me.
And here's our question to callers. What are your questions about the rollout here in Florida of a vaccine for COVID-19? Give us a call right now, 549-2937, to join the show. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open too. So encouraging news that we got yesterday, Dr. Korn. Five hospitals around the state, including UF Health in Jacksonville, could take delivery of COVID-19 vaccinations as early as next week. What do we know so far about this rollout of the vaccine here in Florida?
Incredibly exciting news. And I'd also point out that I'm the clinical investigator for both the Pfizer and the Moderna studies.
Okay.
So what has happened in terms of the sequence of events is that tomorrow we will have the advisory committee meeting with the FDA. And what that means is that a group of outside experts will review all the data from the Pfizer vaccine program and tell the FDA their opinion about whether or not it should be approved and move forward. But in a move that's somewhat unprecedented, the FDA and Pfizer released their briefing document yesterday. And the briefing document is something that typically the advisory committee would get to give them information about the study programs and all the data that came out of the study programs. And this was released publicly 2 days before the actual meeting, which to my knowledge is something that has not been done, or certainly not done routinely. So people like me who have been involved in the study and also very interested in the area had the opportunity to read all the information that came out of the study in this briefing document that's provided to the experts. And really, really exciting stuff. The Pfizer vaccine is quite effective. The safety looks quite good. And it looks like that we will get, quote, official release tomorrow, at which point different states around the country will be able to make distribution decisions based on what their perception of their needs are on a state-by-state basis. As far as the distribution here locally, UF Shands is the local node for distribution. And I've been briefed by some hospital officials that will serve as the place for other hospitals to get access to this product, as you point out, probably within the next 7 to 10 days.
Wow.
So really, really, really exciting stuff.
Yeah, this is coming quickly. And of course, we want to stress, you can't just roll up to UF Health Jacksonville and ask for a COVID shot. They are simply going to be storing them there in extremely cold temperatures. They're calling this the Pfizer 5. Broward Memorial, UF Health Jax, Tampa General, Advent Health in Orlando, and Jackson Memorial in Miami will be the first five Florida hospitals to get this vaccine. Dr. Corin, there will be a sort of a triage system, right, in terms of who is first in line to get these shots. Can you take us through that?
Sure. So it has been agreed by the CDC that frontline healthcare workers will be on the top of the list, as well as the most vulnerable patients, who are largely considered to be older folks in nursing homes. And the details will come out tomorrow. Keep in mind that the FDA has a huge influence on this, and they will probably give more guidance in terms of exactly how the distribution occurs, and that will that'll filter down to the state level and ultimately to the local level. But my thoughts at this point would be that UF Shands would be distributing their supply to other hospitals, and then healthcare workers through the hospitals would get access to the vaccine over the course of, again, the next 7 to 10 days. The exact number of vaccines that will be available is still not completely known, and how we'll be distributing the vaccine in this first wave across different healthcare workers or different people that work in hospitals is still not completely clear. But it sounds like, from what I've heard, that there'll be an adequate supply of vaccines for most healthcare workers that are working in hospitals. And then on the heels of that, keep in mind that this is for the Pfizer vaccine, but the Moderna vaccine will go through the same procedure on the 17th of December. And I imagine that that will increase the supply available. So we should hear, again, a week later that there's another bolus of vaccines that will be available for healthcare workers and ultimately other people who are at high risk.
Now, Dr. Corin, a 91-year-old woman in London was the first sort of civilian to get a COVID shot yesterday. The world watched this. And an 80-year-old man in England named William Shakespeare also got the shot. It was amazing to see that. But at the same time, UK health authorities said Wednesday that anyone with a significant history of allergic reactions should not get the Pfizer CoronaVax, because there have been some patients in the UK that had adverse reactions, people with a history of allergies and such. What can you tell us about this issue?
I'd have to look into the details of the UK advisory on that. But in general, if people have a history of allergic reactions to vaccines or allergic to a lot of different medications, they should be more careful about taking anything. And as you know, the devil is in the details, so you'd have to get into the individual allergic reaction history of the individual patient. And looking at the briefing document, I'm not seeing that there are a lot of immediate allergic reactions to the vaccine. In fact, the immediate reactions, meaning how people respond within the first 30 minutes, is no different between patients who got the vaccine and patients who got placebo. There is certainly an increased risk of having a local site reaction when you get the vaccine as compared to placebo, and that was shown in the briefing documents. And pretty much after the first 7 days after the vaccination, there's really no difference in terms of safety from these documents between placebo patients and patients that received the vaccine. So I think that's really, really encouraging. Again, I can't comment exactly on the UK advisory because I don't have the details for the UK patients.
Sure. But you can tell us about what you know here stateside, since your organization has been involved in both the Pfizer and the Moderna clinical trials, which is really vital local health information.
Sure.
Can you tell us, for those who haven't heard you on the show before, a little bit more about that process?
Absolutely. So we run clinical trials here in Northeast Florida, and we've between the two programs, we have dosed over 750 patients. Half have received the active vaccine, the other half have received placebo. And so we have a sense for whether or not there are a lot of serious adverse events versus relatively minor adverse events. And I can reassure people that we have not seen a lot of serious adverse events. And this has now been collaborated on with centers around the country. And in the briefing document, we're seeing the overall statistics showing that there are very, very few serious adverse events in people taking the vaccine. So again, there is actually a fair amount of local exposure to the vaccine, and we're seeing really, really encouraging information coming out of these programs, supplemented by what we're seeing from around the country and, of course, around the world.
Let's go to your calls now for Dr. Michael Korn of the Jacksonville Center for Clinical Research. What are your questions about a vaccine for coronavirus? UF Health Jacksonville could take delivery of the first batch of vaccines for our area as soon as next week. Call us up now, 549-2937. Jane is in Ponte Vedra Beach. Hi, Jane. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I get allergy shots every couple weeks for ragweed, dog, cat, and those types of general allergies. I've never been allergic to vaccines. I tried to sign up for the Moderna trial here in Jacksonville, and they wouldn't let me be in it because I was getting autoimmune shots. So I'm wondering, do I get, I want the vaccine, I'm 73, do I get the vaccine and just stand there with my EpiPen, or what do I do?
Yeah, what do you do? Thanks, Jane. Yeah, Dr. Korn, this gets back to the issue of people with allergy issues. Should she get the shot or not?
Well, again, it gets down to looking at your individual history and having a physician make the determination if the benefits outweigh the risks in an individual patient. From what you've shared with us, Jane, your age puts you at a slightly higher risk, but not in the highest risk category of people over 80 years old. And I don't know enough about your underlying medical conditions to advise you in terms of whether or not you specifically should get it. But what I will say, if you're not a healthcare worker, you would not be in the first wave of people who the FDA is recommending vaccination to. So a lot of these things require a conversation with a knowledgeable physician who can guide you. But, of course, we can give some general information that hopefully will be helpful to the listeners.
All right. 549-2937. Vince in Neptune Beach. Hi, Vince. Good morning.
Hi. I was wondering if the vaccine has been trialed on children yet.
Sure. And you sound like a, how old are you, Vince?
I'm 11.
11. Okay, Vince. Thanks for that. Kids are not as high risk, of course, Dr. Korn, but that's still an important question from Vince, who's 11. What about children?
Great question. Thank you, Vince, for the question. So the vaccine has been studied in folks as young as 12 years old, so not 11-year-olds. And the FDA briefing guidance document says that there is not enough data between 12 and 16 to make any specific recommendations. And actually, studies are ongoing for looking at adolescents and teenagers. So we don't have enough information about that. But there's no indication that younger people have any worse problems or any difference in their response compared to older people, with one exception that I'll get into in a second. In the studies that we did here in Jacksonville, we enrolled people as young as 16 years old. And again, younger people compared to older people seem to have the same likelihood of immunity. And we'll see what the ultimate guidance is tomorrow from the FDA in terms of younger folks. What I will say is that there does appear to be a trend that younger people have a little bit more of a immune response to the second dose of the vaccine. Keep in mind that the vaccines that we're talking about require two administrations. For Pfizer, it's day 1 and day 21. For Moderna, it's day 1 and day 28. So the second vaccine will really get your immune system going, and younger people tend to have a little bit more of a rigorous immune response and maybe a little bit more likely to get a fever after the vaccine, particularly the second one, or some body aches and things that show that your immune system is kicking in. So I don't know if that answers your question, but we don't have data on 11-year-olds, but everything that we're seeing from 12 and up seems to indicate that younger people more or less are similar to older people, but younger people have not been studied extensively.
I hope that helps you out, Vince. We'll keep looking at that. Dorothy at the beaches. Hi, Dorothy.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for all the information.
Sure.
I am wondering, for all the thousands of people that are involved in the study, how will they know whether or not to get the vaccine?
Yeah, and I'm so glad you asked that, Dorothy, because I have an email here from another listener named Nikki. She says that she's in the Pfizer trial here in town and doesn't know if she got the vaccine or the placebo. Should she go ahead and get the real vaccine? The people that have been in the clinical trial, Dr. Korn.
Great question, and we'll have the final answer to that tomorrow from the FDA. But both Pfizer and Moderna are very open to making sure people in the placebo groups of the vaccine studies have an opportunity to receive the vaccine. The trick here is whether or not people in the study will get the vaccine right away or whether or not they'll get it based on FDA guidance on who is the priority. So in the briefing document from the FDA, they mentioned that there is some value to continue to monitor people in the placebo group who are not at particularly high risk. But that has to be balanced against the fact that people would want to get the vaccine. Naturally, if you've been in the study and you've been a tremendous participant and helped us learn about this really important medical breakthrough, then I think it's very reasonable to ask for the possible protection of the product. So bottom line is that we will get a little bit more information about this tomorrow, but I would guess that if you're in the vaccine study, either at our site or at someplace else, give us a call, and chances are that you'll be prioritized in terms of getting the active product if you're not already on the active product. And so there can be an unblinding process that occurs, and then we can help help you with the next steps. But again, the FDA will have final word on that. We will hear about that tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Yeah, more to come tomorrow. But for right now, we're speaking with Dr. Michael Corrin of the Jacksonville Center for Clinical Research. His organization has been involved in both the local clinical trials for a Pfizer and a Moderna vaccine. We could be seeing delivery of COVID vaccinations to UF Health Jacksonville as soon as next week. That's the Pfizer vaccine. It will be stored there at extremely cold temperatures and will start to be administered first to frontline healthcare workers, then other members of the population. What are your questions about the vaccine for coronavirus? 549-2937 to join us. Patricia on the West Side. Hi, Patricia. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to know if the coronavirus vaccine is an inactivated virus. In other words, is it safe for live organ transplant recipients?
Are you a transplant recipient, Patricia?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that question. Dr. Corn, should Patricia be careful about the vaccine given that she's received a transplant?
Sure. It's an excellent question, and again, with any individual patient, it's very important that that patient speak with his or her physician to get into the details, because certainly I would not be in a position to advise you personally. But having said that, just to help everybody understand, both the Pfizer and the Moderna products use what's called the messenger RNA platform, which means that a virus is not being injected. So there's nothing that can grow or there's nothing that's actually a virus that's being given. In fact, it's just a set of instructions for the body to be introduced to the spike protein from COVID-19 and to activate the immune system to respond appropriately if somebody is confronted with the actual virus. So you don't have to worry about being injected with a virus with either the Pfizer or the Moderna products. Now, whether or not some individual who is on immunosuppressant agents as part of an organ transplant program would respond appropriately or respond the way we expect to the vaccine is a whole other story. And I did not see any specific information on that in the briefing documents, and that would definitely be a discussion with your transplant physician to see whether or not he or she thinks it's a good idea for you to get the vaccine at this point. So, these are some of the very, very interesting questions that we'll get more and more information on as weeks go on.
Yeah. So many people with all kinds of different health issues and questions. This is complex. Rodney on the East Side. Hi, Rodney. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Melissa. I haven't heard much talked about whether someone gets the vaccine, they should continue to follow the safety protocols, wearing masks, social distance, because I know the virus isn't going away for a while.
Yeah, that's a great question too, Rodney. Dr. Corrin, what about that? If you get the shot, can you stop wearing a mask or should you keep it up?
I would keep on wearing my mask personally. Mm-hmm. So the data for the vaccines is really, really impressive. Keep in mind that when you actually look at the number of cases that occur after the vaccine, you start to get protection between 7 and 10 days after the first vaccine. And then everybody in the Pfizer study got their second dose after 21 days, at which point the rate of COVID infections is incredibly low. So the good news is that after two vaccines, your rate of COVID infections is incredibly low. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you should stop all precautions, because it's possible that you can still be exposed to the virus and who knows, maybe even pass it on to somebody else without being systemically infected by it. Keep in mind that your immune system is protecting you, but it's different if you touch the virus and pass it on to somebody else. That's still something we would try to avoid. So my general advice would be that I would not stop taking important hygienic measures such as wearing masks, social distancing, washing your hands. All those things should continue until we're through the epidemic. But there's no doubt that the vaccine personally protects you.
Okay. We'll go back to some more calls for Dr. Michael Korn of the Jack Center for Clinical Research in a moment. The number to join us with questions about a vaccine for COVID being delivered to our area before the end of the year, we're hearing. The number is 549-2937. Lots of tweets, emails, Facebook comments. Doctor, let me get a few to you now. Here's a tweet from Joel. How do we know which vaccine to take? How do we choose between the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine?
Easy answer for that. Whichever one you can get first. They're both excellent products. I'd be comfortable with either.
Either one. Here's a tweet from Susie. My daughter is a speech pathologist in a nursing home. How will the vaccine be distributed to those facilities?
Don't have all the details yet, but we do know that University of Florida Shands will be the node for distribution in Northeast Florida. And we'll be hearing a lot more about that over the next 7 to 10 days, I'm sure.
Here's an email from a listener. Do people with existing conditions like autoimmune diseases need to be extra concerned about side effects like inflammation from the vaccine? Could this trigger that if they get the shot?
Again, we have to know the individual circumstances of individual patients to really answer that question. But what I will say is that the vaccines are designed to activate the immune system. So depending on the nature of an immune problem, you may or may not have the full benefit of the vaccine. I don't think there would be any specific safety issue for the vast, vast majority of patients, even with immune issues. But again, it's very important that you speak with your individual physicians on details that are relevant to individual patients.
Okay, here's another tweet. What is the expectation for long-term effectiveness of the vaccine and protection against various strains of COVID-19? How long are we immune once we are vaccinated?
Great question. The simple answer is we don't know exactly. We know that out to 2 or 3 months that there is excellent protection. Beyond that, we just haven't studied it. In terms of strains and what happens to COVID-19, there's a lot of speculation, and I can only share with you my thoughts and preface that by saying that no one knows exactly what will happen. But keep in mind that COVID-19 is a coronavirus, that most coronaviruses do not infect humans, and that this particular coronavirus has mutated in a way that allows it to affect humans. For this virus to infect humans, it has to have a change in its spike protein that allows it to get into human cells. And the vaccines are very, very effective at creating antibodies against those spike proteins that make it difficult for that coronavirus to infect human cells. So if you just think about that for a second, if COVID-19 or other coronaviruses were to mutate, it's very likely they would mutate in a way that prevents them from infecting human cells, since that's how most coronaviruses are actually built in nature. So I'm actually relatively optimistic about this, that we will not see strains that are able to bypass the immune protection effects of the current vaccines, simply because the current structure of these viruses is required for them to infect human cells.
Let's hope so. Let me get a few more calls in for you. Lots of folks waiting on hold right now. Mike in Fleming Island. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just curious. What's to prevent people from running around saying that they did get the vaccination? Is there any documentation for travel or anything like that that you get when they do get the vaccination?
Great question. We have the best callers. What about really? That question, doctor?
Interesting. I'm not sure how that's going to be handled. I'm actually very interested in that myself, because personally, I'm dying to travel as well.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Fortunately, because I'm a healthcare worker involved, I'll be getting the vaccine as soon as I can. And I'm not sure how that's going to work. So I'm sure there'll be some documentation. We have to see how airlines and TSA and other parties respond to those things. As far as fraudulent documentation, I'm sure that'll be an issue that we'll figure out down the road.
But, okay.
I would hope everybody would take this very seriously and understand that not only are they putting themselves at risk by fraudulent documentation, but they're putting others at risk.
Yeah, just be honest, people. Jerry in Ponte Vedra, I think, has a similar question. Hi, Jerry, go ahead.
Since that question was answered, let me ask another one. I'm in the Moderna study, and I met Dr. Gorn. He's a great guy. And one of my I was vaccinated because after the second shot, I had a temperature rise of about 1 degree. And going further in the study, I probably have gone through 3 visits, and my 4th one will probably be in around March where they'll take blood. And will we be able to get information on, if we're doing blood samples, whether we still have, I guess, a strong antibody count so that we are still safe and maybe don't need to have a booster of some sort?
Thanks, Jerry, sure. And thanks for participating. Let's give thanks to the folks that stuck up their hands and said, I want to be in these clinical trials. Thank you, Jerry. Dr. Corm, what about his question?
Yeah, again, I would amplify the fact that people that participated in trials are really heroes, and we should be very thankful and grateful for their, you know, for the work that they've done. So, this caller is actually one of my patients, so I could be a little bit different in terms of my answer to this patient. And again, in general terms, both Moderna and Pfizer are certainly interested in taking volunteers from the studies and letting them know their status, whether or not they actually got the vaccine or got placebo. So this caller, like other people who are participating in the studies, will have the opportunity to call our center and learn about what their randomization assignment was. Keep in mind that the Moderna study will have their FDA hearing on the 17th of December, so the final rules on how we disclose information will come from that meeting. But both companies have made it clear that folks who are participating in the study should have facilitated access and should get the information about their study assignment.
Okay. Fred in Jack's Beach. Hi, Fred. Go ahead.
Hi. I have been self-quarantined since March. No signs or symptoms. I called my doctor and asked if I should go get tested. He said no. And now I turned 85. A few days ago. I'm quite not sure how I get in line to be able to get the vaccine.
Sure. So, Doctor, whether it's Fred or any other senior who's quarantining at home, isolating themselves, they just want to know, when can I get access to this?
And certainly based on the age of the caller, that person would have facilitated access compared to younger people who are not at as high risk for complications of COVID-19. When that will come, I don't know for sure. But what we do know is that healthcare workers and people in nursing homes and other facilities will get primary access as first line. And then after that, we think just older folks who are healthy and doing the right thing at home will probably be next in line, is my guess, as well as people with underlying conditions. But again, this will be a developing story over the course of the next few weeks to months, and also, of course, depend on the supply of vaccine, which I believe will be relatively rapidly ramped up.
Okay.
The good news is that we're looking, in my opinion, we're looking at weeks, not months, when folks like this caller will be able to get access to the vaccines.
That is so encouraging. Nicole in Jacksonville. Hi, Nicole, go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Corn. I wanted to ask a question. I am African-American, but I wanted to see what was the representation of African-Americans and Latinos and other minorities. Was it adequate representation for us within the studies between Moderna and Pfizer?
Great question. Yeah. Thanks, Nicole.
Yeah, it was. I can give you the exact number. 9.8% of the participants in the Pfizer study were African-American. And their response to the vaccine was no different than other races. the Latino percentage was around 24%.
Okay. And let me ask you this as well. People of color are at heightened risk for contracting COVID at the same time that there is more reluctance among these populations to step forward and get the vaccine. There is a real public health awareness campaign in communities of color right now to encourage people not to be afraid of the vaccine. And I'm curious to get your thoughts about that.
Sure. Yeah, the data are very encouraging for all races. There is no difference between different races in terms of the efficacy of the vaccine or any safety parameters of the vaccine. So we have really, really strong information now to help all people feel comfortable. The other thing is I'd like to point out that it's really age that makes the difference in this disease. So if you're a younger person of whatever race, your risk is lower for severe complications compared to being an older person of whatever race. So the most important demographic in terms of this disease is age. And to help people understand that, I can just throw out some statistics from the state of Florida, that if you are 24 years of age or younger, whatever your race is, your likelihood of dying of COVID-19 is well less than 1 in 4,000. If you're, say, between ages of 55 and 70, your likelihood of dying of COVID-19 infection is about 2%, or, 1 in 50. But once you get to be around mid-80s and older, your likelihood of dying of a COVID infection, again, of any race, is about 1 in 4. So there's a huge, huge difference in terms of how lethal this disease is, really depending on age. And again, we have more and more information that race is not really a determinant of how you respond to COVID-19 specifically or how the vaccine works.
Okay.
Now, race is related to socioeconomic issues, and certainly there have been differences from a socioeconomic standpoint in terms of exposure to the virus. But that's a little bit different than what happens once you're infected or you have efficacy of the vaccine. So hopefully that's clear to folks.
Thanks for that. Jessica in San Marco. Hi, Jessica. Go ahead.
Hi there. Two quick things. Maybe you already touched on this. I apologize. But has there been a big difference in how women versus men respond or maybe have negative reactions to the vaccine? And also, I had no idea so many Jacksonville residents were in these trials, participating in them. And I just want to give a huge shout out. I know you guys mentioned this earlier, but I think, they really need to get their full due, man. I'm really proud of them.
I know it.
And I'll take my response off the air.
Absolutely right, Jessica. Okay, thanks for that. Doctor, women versus men.
So as far as the vaccine is concerned, in terms of both side effects and efficacy, no difference. As far as the effects of COVID-19 infection, actually men do worse than women. And in fact, if you look at the number of men per capita in the state of Florida who have died from COVID-19, it is significantly greater than the number of women per capita who have died from COVID-19. So men have a higher lethality risk. But as far as the vaccine is concerned, it works equally well in both men and women.
Okay.
And the safety parameters are no different between men and women.
And that is encouraging. We are coming up on a break, and I want to thank you for sticking with us through this extended segment, Doctor, as you have been so intimately involved with the local clinical trial research, the studies for both Pfizer and Moderna here on the ground in Jacksonville. As we wrap it up now with Dr. Michael Corrin of the Jacksonville Center for Clinical Research, again, the first COVID Pfizer vaccine shots could be delivered to UF Health Jacks as soon as next week. So, Dr. Corrin, a very happy holiday to you, and thanks once again.
Thank you for having me.
All right, a quick break and much more still ahead later. Some positive news and notes for your midweek. It's our What's Good Wednesdays. That's later. But up next.
Early detection is the key to limiting fraud. So if you do, set up an alert for yourself, you're able to step right in and get that car turned off or, get to the bottom of the issue.
Protecting yourself from holiday scammers as you go out shopping. That's in a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Well, as you go about that holiday shopping, both in-store and online, be careful. Fraud and scams are rampant this time of year, but there are ways to make sure you're not defrauded, scammed, or financially victimized this holiday season. For more on that, I spoke with Stephanie Mintz, Fraud Prevention Analyst with Community First Credit Union. Hi, Stephanie. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's interesting to talk to a certified fraud expert. You literally are an expert at this stuff with Community First Credit Union. And at this time of year, people are a little more focused on this, but they really should be focused on it all of the time. As we do our holiday shopping, people do want to safeguard their personal information, their financial information, whether they go into a store or whether they're doing it online. So what are some basic steps they can take?
Sure. I think there's a couple of things that you can do to proactively protect yourself, and these are steps that you can take today. I think it's really important that you familiarize yourself with features on your financial institution's online banking site or your credit card's online banking site. A lot of people don't realize that there's customizable features such as alerts on there so that you can be alerted, you know, at your you know, with whatever limits you want to set for transaction limits, deposit limits, balance limits. And I think that's something that people don't quite take advantage of. So it's important to know when transactions post to your account and clear. I think that early detection is the key to limiting fraud. So if you do, you know, set up an alert for yourself and you don't recognize it, you're able to step right in and get that card turned off or, you know, get to the bottom of the issue.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Another thing that I think people don't realize that is on the features on their online banking is a card control feature. A lot of financial institutions have this now. A card control feature will let you freeze or unfreeze your debit card. It's very important to do that if the debit card has been out of your possession. A lot of times we'll misplace our cards or we'll leave them in the back pocket of our jeans and we find them in the laundry basket. So they're not really lost, but they're out of our possession. The card control feature would be a perfect opportunity to use that. That would limit any transaction spending on that card until you're able to locate it again. If you're not able to locate it, you need to call your financial institution and report it lost or stolen right away.
Yeah, that's always so important. Okay, what about protecting your valuables? People are out there shopping. They get excited. They don't always keep as close an eye as they might. So I would think you're more vulnerable at this time to being pickpocketed or having some issue happen.
Definitely. You need to be cognizant of distractions. Distractions are what the bad guys are counting on. We all have distractions. You know, we're with family, we're with friends, we're with children, but you really do need to pay attention to who's around you and what's going on. I think one of the things that you can do proactively is limit the cards and the personal information that you take out of your house with you when you go to the store. There is no need for you to have every credit card or every piece of identification that you've ever had in your purse or wallet. If your purse or wallet is stolen, everything gets taken. So take only the cards that you need, leave the personal information that you don't need at home, and just carry only your main cards. This is going to limit your exposure to fraud.
All right. What about when you order things and they get dropped on the porch? Sometimes people have items stolen right off their porch.
Unfortunately, that happens every day, all day. I think that the best way to avoid porch theft is just to limit the amount of time that the package is left unattended on the porch. And the way that you can do that is have your package delivered to an alternate address. If your job allows it, why not have it delivered to your office? Can you have it delivered to a P.O. box or a place where someone is home? If not, are you able to network with your neighbors? You know, ask your neighbors if they're able to go grab the package off the porch. You know, people nowadays have a lot of things like, you know, the Ring cameras or the Ring doorbells, and that might deter theft, but all that really is going to do is record the theft in process. And the ultimate goal is to retrieve your package. So it's better to have that package, you know, in someone's hand safely rather than recording the crime in action.
Good tip. Okay, what other digital solutions do you recommend that as consumers we can avail ourselves of to protect all our information?
Something that I use, I think, on a daily basis, especially in the office, is the Wallet Pay feature on my smartphone. Wallet Pay could be Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, Google Pay. And what that is that stores your digital card information, and it tokenizes the number. What that means is that it basically will assign a new card number digitally to your spending, so that the vending machine that you use, the Target cashier, they don't actually have your actual debit card number. They have a tokenized version of that. When you use your Apple Pay or your Wallet Pay, you don't have to pull out cards or cash from your wallet. Everyone always has their phone nearby, and it's a way that you can just tap and touch with your phone, and you know, use your face identification or your thumbprint to identify yourself with that pay feature, and you're not having to go through your wallet, you know, risk the chance of leaving a debit card behind or having something falling on the ground. And then now with COVID, it's another way also that you don't have to touch too many things. You don't have to exchange cash back and forth or cards back and forth. You just tap and go.
Smart. All right. Last but not least, a lot of fraud only shows up after Christmas when we maybe go through the credit card statements. Any tips for what to do if we think something's amiss after the holidays?
Good question. It's very important that you review your statements, of course. I would recommend that you review your online banking on a daily, on a daily schedule. It's important once you detect something to report it to your financial institution right away so that the investigation can begin. Like I said earlier, I think that early detection is the key to limiting fraud. So once you see something on there, it's important that you do report it to your financial institution. In some cases, if you read the fine print on the back of your statement, you only have a certain number of days or a billing cycle before you're able to report that fraud, and where you're going to be able in a position to get the funds back. So it's important to identify it and report it right away.
Thanks so much, Stephanie. She's Stephanie Mintz, a fraud prevention expert and specialist analyst with Community First Credit Union here in Jacksonville. Happy and safe shopping, everyone. Thanks, Stephanie.
Thank you.
And in a moment, some positive news and notes for your midweek. It's our What's Good Wednesday. We'll be right back.
This is the time to take a stand. Things aren't going as we planned. I think it's time to start.
It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Escape to a world of British telly on BritBox and PBS Passport when you become a supporter of WJCT. Sign up at jacksbundle.com today.
Turntable Tuesday can now be heard on Anthology on the WJCT app and 89.9 HD3. For the best on vinyl, listen to Anthology Tuesdays at 9. Turntable Tuesday, part of the Jacksonville.
Congaree & Penn. Dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com. Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and services tailored for active retirees. Information at vickerslanding.com.
Next time on The World, the Paris Climate Agreement, 5 years on.
We can basically say that so far, the Paris Agreement process has worked.
Many of the world's biggest countries have promised to cut new carbon emissions to zero by 2050. But what they do in the near future could determine if that's actually possible. The path forward on climate change on The World.
This afternoon at 3
here on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, working on behalf of people sentenced to life under drug laws later regarded as unfair and unconstitutional. We talk with lawyer Brittany Barnett, who started this work after her mother was convicted of a nonviolent crack-related offense. Seven of Barnett's clients were granted clemency by President Obama and one by President Trump. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
It's left some lost for words.
You know, we won Georgia, just so you know.
Frankly, we did win this election.
If you count the legal votes, I easily win.
But the president lost. And at some point, critics say an attempt to grab power starts to look more like a soft coup. Defining danger and how to deal with it. Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, it's been a challenging year, so we're all looking forward to winding down, enjoying the company of loved ones this holiday, and saluting all the local heroes who've gotten us through 2020. Here's our look at the positive across the First Coast. It's our What's Good Wednesdays, beginning with the New American Speakers Program. They represent 8 different countries and more than 10 languages. They train immigrants and refugees who want to develop public speaking and storytelling skills. Founder Basma Alawi selected 10 trainees for this. There's a full scholarship package. It's a really cool project, and you can check out their final virtual storytelling night tomorrow night. It's online. Well, the local nonprofit Mission Morale supports the local Navy community. They send them personalized care packages. This year, they hope to get packages out to 100 Navy sailors based out of Mayport. And they've got a packaging event coming up Sunday in Nocatee. I learned more from founder Randy Bruce.
It's at the Really Good Beer Stop in Nocatee. We basically all gather there to form an assembly line, and we've already purchased all the items for the care packages. Basically, on the 13th, we all get together to have a little bit of food and kind of do a mass assembly line to get these all packed and get ready to ship.
Check it out. Lend a helping hand yourself. Go to missionmorale.org. Here is something you need to know. CareerSource Northeast Florida is holding a virtual hiring fair tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Some of the region's top employers will be there. Register at their website. Search CareerSource Northeast Florida. The local Indo-U.S. Chamber furthers the Indian-American relationship in our area. They are ending 2020 with a wellness weekend. This is a 2-day event. It'll be streamed live on Facebook and YouTube Saturday and Sunday with professionals presenting on topics from both Western and alternative healing practices. Check it out at their website. And congrats to Quentin White of JU. The St. John's Riverkeeper has created an award in his name. It's the first ever Dr. A. Quentin White Jr. For the River Award. White is executive director of the Marine Science Research Center Institute at Jacksonville University. Congrats to him. Okay, we're in the middle of a pledge drive. It's our end of the year. A call out to all of the listeners. And right now, station manager David Luckin is here to tell us what's happening. Hey, David.
Well, first I'll just give the phone number and invite people to call us at 353-9528. And if you're a fan and a regular listener of First Coast Connected, then you know how important this program is. So if you've just enjoyed an hour of this and you feel just a little bit smarter, then give us a call at 353-9528.
I hope so.
I know I am every day. I listened last night. Of course, we rebroadcast this at 8 o'clock at night. So if you're listening at night, please call us too. Our volunteers are standing by to take your pledge so that we can continue all this intelligent programming from your public media organization into 2021 and 2022 and 23 and 24. However far we make it because folks like you are helping us along the way. Your $5 is $10 today through Friday. Everything is doubled. So if you can afford a one-time $100 or $500 pledge, imagine you just double that to $1,000 if you could give us $500. And we also realize that these are extraordinary times and a lot of folks out there just can't do anything. They're just getting by. And we so understand that and appreciate that. And we invite you to just stay there and listen and keep yourself and your family together.
That's right.
And don't worry about it. On the other hand, a lot of people are working or less affected by all of this. we ask you to, you know, help us out if you can.
That's
right. If you can't, no worries. We will continue the great programming for the whole community, whether you can participate in this drive or not. So if you can, give us a call now at 353-9528. I want to thank everyone who's called so far. We're actually looking pretty good at this last chance to give to your public media group.
If you are a regular listener and you are able to donate, as David said, you're donating for yourself and hundreds, even thousands of other people who aren't in a position to enjoy this public service, or they want to enjoy it, but they can't afford to contribute. If you donate in any amount today through Friday, you will automatically be entered to win a Google Home Home Assistant. We're giving out two of those every day this week. So do it now, and here's another goodie. If you decide to pledge at $10 a month, we will send you, as a thank you, two branded WJCT face masks. Even though, as we learned on the show today, a vaccine is imminent, we are going to need to keep wearing these masks for a while longer, doctors say. So make the call, make the pledge now, 353-9528 or online at wjct.org. Again, thanks to Newsmatch, your money will double this week. David Luckin, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me in. And thanks for a great show every day of almost every day of the year. You seldom ever even call in sick, do you?
I have only called in sick literally like when I was physically sick, so sick I couldn't come in one time.
In 10 years.
In 11 years.
We appreciate your dedication.
And I and the person who had to fill in for me was not happy.
Because so you probably called 5 minutes before the show.
So that's why I never call in sick.
I gotcha.
So, yeah. Okay. And again, it's WJCT.org to donate. And check out our What's Good Wednesday e-newsletter, too. That's our show. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is our director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 or our podcast up later today, wherever you listen. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Again, make that call. Pledge now, 353-9528. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.